Hello and welcome to the first edition of the Cops Alive Audio Bulletin. My name is John Marks, and today we have a very special guest with us, a former police officer from the Metropolitan Police in London, Ted Newman. Let's welcome Ted.
Hi, everybody. This is Ted Newman from the UK. I'm an ex-police officer. I served in the Metropolitan Police in London from 1985. That was March of 1985 until June of 2007, when I retired from the job after 30 years pensionable service. And the reason I was able to get the 30 years pensionable service in was because before I joined the police, I actually served for just over 9 years in the Royal Air Force, the RAF as it is known. And luckily, because it was government-based, that when I joined the police in 85, I was able to transfer my pension from the Air Force and have it count towards my police pension. So I actually just did over 22 years, and with the time that it was accrued from the RAF, I actually got my full 30 years pension, so therefore I was able to retire in June of 2007 with a full police pension. And otherwise, I would just still have another 4 or 5 years to do.
We've had a chance to talk a little bit, and I know you had a very interesting career. Can you share with us just some of the high points? You weren't just assigned just to the Metropolitan Police in London, but you did some other interesting things too, didn't you?
That's right. After the, basically in the English police system, everybody, when they first joined the police, they do the two-year probationary period. I suppose every force has its own probationary period. And because I was older when I joined, I sort of took a real good interest in it and made sure that I did everything I was supposed to do. And after I did my probationary period, I did the normal walking the street, the beat duty, things like that. And then because of a change in my personal circumstances, with my sort of ex-wife deciding pastures were greener on the other side, shall we say, I moved the job, and it just sort of happened that while I was looking to move within the department to another department, one of my friends who'd been and worked in the centre of town with the Royal Protection Department as a sort of an attachment for 6 months, which is something that they did, let people go into the department to see what it was like for about 5 or 6 months, and if it was for them, they could apply to stay on full time. If not, they could always apply to go back to where they were before. And I applied and was accepted for the Royal Protection Department. And after about three and a half years of being on the streets, and I stayed there for the rest of my service virtually. I served at Buckingham Palace for about 5 years. I served at most of the other palaces in London on different occasions, in James's Palace, when Prince Charles and the Queen Mother used to reside, Kensington Palace, where Princess Diana lived. And then I actually finished my time in the department at Windsor Castle. And I spent a good few years at Windsor Castle. I was actually there when Windsor actually burned down, the castle burned down. I was on duty that morning. And that could be a tale we could talk about that would last quite a while, John, but we'll leave that for another time, I think. But all in all, it was a really good experience. I travelled a little bit with the royal family. I spent 10 years travelling in Scotland with them, and that was to do the when the Queen has her annual visit to Holyrood in Edinburgh, which usually takes place around June time. And then from July till just after the start of October, the court is then resident in Balmoral Castle, which is near Aberdeen, Scotland. And I served it there for around 10 years from different places, Holyrood and Balmoral. And it was quite an experience.
Well, we're not really talking about just your normal policing experience here either. I mean, I imagine in that time there were some amazing experiences that most police officers would never get to enjoy.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I suppose it's like anything else. When you go in your department, you don't realize how it works, just like any job. I mean, you never start a job on the first day and know everything about it. It's when you go into places, the way the job itself was structured, everything that went on, all the planning, it's amazing that what goes on. I mean, I've seen it firsthand with the likes of President Bush when he came over to the UK, and I was at Buckingham Palace and saw the amount of planning that everything that went into there was talking to our compatriots from the States, and seeing how they worked. And it's just people outside just imagine that these things happen, but the planning that goes into them is just phenomenal. And it involves an awful lot of people. And because it goes off, shall we say, without any problems most of the time, it's all down to planning and how the operations work and everything. Within itself, I mean, I was in Balmoral for the very sad period that when Lady Diana was killed in the car crash in France.
Yeah.
I was actually at work. I had been at work that the afternoon before, and I was due to go back the next afternoon. When we found out in the morning that she'd been killed, that in itself was was a sad day. It had a lot of memories, both good and bad, especially seeing the two princes at the time. You know, seeing them on that day, I mean, you just didn't know what to say to them. You just sort of spoke to them very quietly and just let them get on with the wrong way of dealing with things, as with the way the rest of the royal family dealt with it. Yes, it was an interesting time, shall we say. And then when we came back to London, I was at Windsor then, and there was an awful lot of people wanting to sign the books of condolences and things like this. And sometimes we ended up reopened the books on a morning for people to come and sign. And sometimes, John, we'd have to close them in the afternoon without people getting in. It was like that for an enormous amount of time. It was amazing how many people wanted to show their appreciation, shall we say, for what she meant to them. And she was known as the people's princess.
Yeah.
Well, that was very interesting. And of course, other things, like I said, I was at Windsor the day the castle burned down and all that entailed. It was a case of everybody coming together there to help prevent the fires and everything from spreading any further. All the police officers that were involved, all the staff, even the army guard at the time, which was the regiment of Gurkhas, they were all in at the time and helped get all the equipment, all the artifacts from all the rooms and everything were bussed down to there's a placing within the castle where everything's secured in sort of alarm stores, and that was used, and that was quite an operation in itself. But there's been many other things as well. I mean, often the wedding had the wedding of Prince Andrew and also Edward, Sophie, the Countess of Wessex, and other things, the death of Princess Margaret, and of course the death of the Queen Mother, all sort of periods in the time that I served there that you never forget what went on. And but all in all, it was great. It was a real good career, and I really enjoyed it. And like you say, it's not many people can turn around and say that they did what I did for a number of years.
Did you? You not only received the regular police officer training, but sounds like you did an awful lot of executive protection, a lot of security work. Did you have to receive a lot of additional training for that kind of an assignment?
Well, more because, as you know, most of the police officers in England are unarmed police officers and things like this. So of course, our department was an armed department. When you first joined, they had to see if you were fit enough to carry a firearm. You had to sort of pass the test, and they had to see how you worked as a person before they even put you in for the firearms course and things like that. And then we would do that And like we would have to qualify firearm certificate every 6 weeks we had to do it. And then also 2 or 3 times a year we went away and did practical training and things like this. And then we spent time giving training that was specific to the job, for what we would do, what we entailed, whether it was dealing with the royals themselves or people that attend events, shall we say, many of the events that go on. It was long and varied. I mean, it just wasn't the same thing all the time.
Yeah.
It was interesting and very varied, and we met a lot of other people and other fellow cops from all over the world who, when they came to London with whoever they were in there, sort of protecting themselves, and made a lot of friends.
One thing that struck me when you and I spoke, or when you and I met, is that you had an awful lot of foresight about knowing that you weren't going to be in police service forever, and you did an awful lot of planning and research to create a life beyond retirement. Can you tell us a little bit about that too?
Yeah, well, really, it's just the nature of how I am. I've always been somebody who's not worried about the future, but always tried to sort of have an eye on what I intended to do in the future, no matter what I was doing. And what it was, virtually, I sat down at home about 10 or 11 years ago and just sort of started to write out what I was good at, or what I thought I was good at, what I was qualified to do, what exams I'd passed, all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of made the decision, what would I like to try and learn about, or the future, what am I going to do when I retire? Where is my life going to go? Will I just take the retirement and sit down and enjoy it and not do anything? But that's not me. I'm just not that kind of person. We're all entitled to a break, especially police officers after serving in such, or for some, such arduous places and doing arduous tasks all their life. They deserve a break. But I just couldn't retire and just sit in the house and think, what am I going to do next? So I say one day I sat down with a pen, just got a piece of paper out, started writing down everything I was good at. And I've always been sort of very good with finance, never really owed anybody any money in my life apart from the mortgage for the house. Which thankfully is now gone, so now mortgage free and the property is mine. And I started to do little things, and because of where I live in Berkshire, and I'm about 10 minutes away from Ascot Racecourse, if you know where that is, John, at all.
I've been there.
You've been there?
Yeah.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Well, of course, and this week, as we're speaking now, this is the last day of Royal Ascot.
So that's right.
The Queen and the Duke will probably be at Ascot now, with other members of the royal family and guests, for the royal meeting, which lasts from the Tuesday to the Friday or Saturday. And, of course, living so close to the race course, I was always had a little bit of interest in it. I've never really been much of a gambler when it comes to that. And then one day, as it happened, I just happened to get a piece of information through the post, shall we say, from a marketer, an internet marketer, whose name was Stuart Goldsmith. And he was offering to show people how to learn how to bet on the horses. And I thought to myself, well, what do? You just go and throw some money and pick a horse and do what most people do and stick some money on it, hope it wins. But I thought, well, I've always been interested. And when you think about the people who usually attend the meetings and things like that, there's a lot of sort of high finance and a lot of people there who are well-to-do, shall we say. And I thought, well, let's have a little look at this and see what it was. And I did the course, which was a monthly subscription course where you paid a sum of money every month. And this course was sent out to you in paper format. And I did that, and I used that and started to use what I learned to actually have a go at making some money on the horses.
How did that work out for you?
It was good. I came out on top. I came out on top by quite a few £1,000, shall we say. It was something that I liked doing at the time, but I couldn't see myself doing full-time when I retired. If I hadn't got myself into doing what I'm doing now, mm-hmm. I could easily turn back and go back into that.
So what are you doing now? What did you learn from that experience?
What I learned from that, I mean, I've always been a disciplined person with finance and things like this. And when you're doing something like, well, anything, but if we use the horse racing thing as an example, mm-hmm. what you did there was, what the advice was say you took a sum of money in your betting bank, shall we say, and if it was like just a couple of £1,000 or $4,000 or $5,000, something like that, mm-hmm. and you split that up into 20th. So what you did then was, whatever your bank was, whatever you decided, 1/20th, if they give you the information that this race is worth 1 point, whatever your 1/20th stake was, you put it on the horse either to win or whatever the recommendations were, mm-hmm. to do. And that way on, it virtually meant that you could have sort of 18 or 19 losses on the trot, and then if you had a winner, you'd still have money to in your bank. Mm-hmm. You would never technically go broke.
Right.
And the service that I was subscribing to for the information had never had a longer losing run more than about 6 races. So it was good to know that from the very beginning, because it sort of gives you the confidence to go forward and do it. And well, if it loses, I've only had a run of 6 mm-hmm. Before. And that's how it happened. Little things, you know, just grew. And made a little bit of money, which was good enough, and that then was able enabled me to take it further and learn other things. So let's say the
So tell us about the project you're working on now.
Beg your pardon?
So tell us about the project you're working on now.
Well, one of the things, because when I got that piece of paper, I thought, well, look at this. Somebody's sending me a piece of paper with information on it and charging me for it. And I'm more than willing to pay for that information that's on this piece of paper, because it was valuable information.
Right.
And like I said, no matter what it cost at the time for the course, I made back 10, 20 times the amount that I paid for the course.
Right.
So it was a very valuable subscription to have. Hmm. And so what I did was I contacted the guy who sent me the course and sent him an email and just said who I was and what I'd done. And I learned more about his other courses and things like this. And then I started to sort of study what he did. And that got me into learning about internet marketing. And that's what I do now full time after I retired. But it was something that I decided about 5 years ago, that after learning it and looking at it, that this is the way I wanted to go. I did apply to be able to do it sort of as a second income with the police, because of the nature of my job, etc. It wasn't thought that it would be a very good thing for me to do. So I had to wait virtually till I retired before I could turn my hand to it full time.
Wow.
And that's what I was doing.
Well, I can tell everybody listening that you and I had a chance, you and I met at an internet marketing course. As it turned out, it was held on a cruise ship while we were cruising in the Caribbean. And we got a chance to learn from some experts in the field while we were enjoying our vacation, so to speak. And it sounds like you're doing some fascinating things right now and actually sharing with people some of the information you learned. And I think that's particularly valuable to police officers, because I think a lot of guys or a lot of people are feeling stuck in the job and don't know what they're going to do, or don't know what they would do if they ever quit or retired or lost their job. And I think you had the foresight to be planning ahead a little bit.
Yeah, planning ahead is always something I've tried to do. Whether it might never have worked out the way I planned it, but at least, you know, it's not just sitting there wondering, you know, sort of what shall I do next? I've always, like I said, tried to have a plan in front of me and go down that road. And if it doesn't work out, then find something else. But, you know, don't just sit there thinking that nothing's going to happen or, you know, what you're going to do. I mean, because police officers themselves, I mean, you think of it. I mean, personal security these days is everybody's into personal security, especially the way things have happened around the world in the last 2 or 3 years.
Sure.
And things like that. And there's so much that police officers could teach other people. Even just simple things, because it's something like I said with my information marketing and things like this, it's keeping things simple because the majority of people just want to learn the simple things.
Yeah.
And if you learn the simple things and learn them well, then of course you can progress if you want into learning other things. So if you get the basics right, you can then expand on your knowledge, and you'll always find somebody who will show you how to expand on your knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And learn about what you want to learn. And like I say, with personal security, sort of like building security, things like this, advice, bodyguards, whatever. I mean, the police mm-hmm. service and some of our colleagues in the army, etc., who do the same sort of things in the army.
Mm-hmm.
You can take that knowledge after you've left the service, and you can put it to great use, because there will always be somebody who wants to learn about security in whatever shape or form. And you can deliver it to them. And you can deliver it to them in audios, videos, conversations like we're having now, John, between ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And people can make money doing that?
Of course. Yes, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, if, like I said, if people want to learn about something, it's like hobbies. I mean, take golf and things like that. I mean, I'm a golfer. I know you've played a little bit of golf.
Uh-huh.
And if we just use that as an example, I mean, golfers are one of the most avid people for buying things. I mean, buying things.
True?
You know,
I spent a lot of money on my game.
Yeah. I did. I just wished it improved a bit. But
yeah,
there you go.
Me too.
But yeah, of course. I mean, anything that golfers are a prime example of people who will pay money. And sometimes you might think, oh, well, you know, how much does a new golf club come out? If we take one of the ones from the big make, shall we say, without going into any trade names here.
Yeah.
And one of them brings out a top-of-the-range golf club with a new head or whatever, with titanium inserts and stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they know that they're going to sell because the brand of the quality, the goods, because the goods themselves are quality, that golfers will put their hands in the pockets and they will buy them.
Mm.
And you can do exactly the same with information products for golfers. You know, it's showing people, you know, how to do this, how to cut your handicap, 10 tips or something to do this, how to cut your handicap down in under 3 hours or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
All this kind of thing. You can always find the information to help. And not everybody knows everything about golf. There's always somebody at some stage of their life who needs to know how to do this. You might start and you might progress. You might get your handicap down.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, there's people coming into the game all the time. And they need to know how to get the handicap down. So there's always room for people to create products and things like that for golfers.
Yeah.
And I can see exactly the same principle with police officers, security personnel, and things like this. I mean, another great subject would be how about security for people when they travel overseas and things like this on
mm-hmm.
aircraft, and, you know, what not to take and things like this, what you do at certain places. Different parts of the world have different rules, as we all know.
Mm.
And just things like this. I mean, somebody who's traveled travel extensively, who has this knowledge, could turn that knowledge into a living and make a steady living from that. Because it's not just the product itself, it's what else you can relate to that product. I mean, not going into it too deeply here, it's what we call the back-end marketing of a product. It's the product itself, the main product, might be a feeder. It is what else you can put with that product that can lead to a sort of greater financial gain for the person doing it and for the people who subscribe.
So what you're doing now is teaching other people what you spent 5 or 6 years researching on how to create a product about some sort of information product of something you know about and how to be able to sell that over the internet. So you don't actually have to have a store. You can do it on your own from your own home, right?
That's correct. Yes.
You know, yes. I almost think, would you be willing, we're going to run out of time today, but would you be willing to talk about that at length sometime?
Of course. No okay. problem at all.
Yeah, maybe we'll do another one of these interviews. Where can people learn more about what you're doing? Do you have a website or something?
Well, the product I'm about to launch a product, and I'll just the product's called Simple Information Marketing.
Okay.
And that's at simpleinformationmarketing.com.
Great.
And all that is it's for anybody who wants to learn how to get their feet on the ladder of becoming an information marketer. And it really steps them through the processes of how you go about it, the way you can, what you can do yourself.
Mm-hmm.
To actually see what products you yourself can create. It's just a step-by-step guide, but it's very thorough, showing people how to actually do this. And anybody can do it. You don't have to have a great standard of education. It's for anybody who can, if you can read and write, if you can use one finger to type, because I'm not the world's fastest typer on a computer or anything, if you can do that, you can learn. And it's amazing what people, what we have, people in general, carry around in our heads, the knowledge that we have that we think other people might not be interested in.
Mm-hmm.
But it's amazing what people are interested in. And this is just a way of getting that knowledge out from inside you and showing you how to develop that and then creating an information product from that. I mean, that's it in a basic, in a nutshell. It's a little bit more complicated than that, but not much.
Okay.
And this just shows people how to do it. And I'm more than willing to talk about that anytime.
Well, and it strikes me that police officers around the world could benefit from that. So if you're willing, I think we'll do another one of these interviews and learn a little bit more about what you're doing now.
Yes,
and go from there.
It'll be a pleasure.
Great. And I was going to also add that, you know, I learned an awful lot about just running my business, starting the blog copsalive.com when I went on that information marketing cruise, and I'm going to do it again in January of 2009, and I hope that maybe we'll see you again, but people can learn more about the group that Cops Alive is going to put together at www.copsalive.com. Or excuse me, copsalivecruises.com, because my intent is, I found that so valuable. This group from all over the world, when you and I went, I think there were people from 7 countries there. There were about 125 of us. They're trying to get 500 people for the cruise in 2009, and their ultimate goal is to fill an entire cruise ship with people who want to learn how to do business on the internet the year after that. So I'm excited. I'm going to go back again, and I'd like to learn more about what you're doing. So this is John Marks from copsalive.com, and I want to thank Ted very much for his time on the phone today. And, Ted, I think if you're willing, we'll talk about this again.
Yeah, certainly, John. It's great. And for anybody, if there's any police officers out there who in any way, shape, or form are worried about what they're going to do with their careers, shall we say, after they retire from the police force, just please visit copsalive.com, have a look at the Cops Alive cruises, get in contact with John, and I'm sure we can help you make a decision what you're going to do with your life after you retire from the police force. Just don't give up and don't think there's anything there. Cops Alive is going to be the place for you to go. And John, I'd like to thank you very much again for inviting me here to do this interview with me. It's been a pleasure, and I'm very grateful.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you, Ted, and thanks for everybody listening.
Bye now.
This is John Marks, and you've been listening to the Cops Alive Audio Bulletin, where we help law enforcement professionals plan for happy, healthy, and successful lives on the job and beyond. Please join us again next time.